You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
I hear these fools on TV talking about defund the police and things like that. We need police reform and prison reform and things like that. Because you know who ain't going to defund the cops? White neighborhoods and rich neighborhoods. So that notion they keep saying that, I'm like, wait a minute. We just going to leave. Who are black people supposed to call? Ghostbusters? When we have crime in our neighborhoods? We need police reform. But like I say, white people, especially rich white people, they're always going to have cops. So we need to stop that defund or abolish the cops crap.
The words of Charles Barkley, NBA star, September the 25th, 2020. His opinion on defunding police, very clear. He also has some opinions on the Breonna Taylor ruling that came down yesterday. And we're going to hear from him and also a civil rights attorney with his opinion on it. As I mentioned, Barkley, we're also going to hear from LeBron James and his opinion regarding the Breonna Taylor ruling. And the Breonna Taylor family is currently holding a news conference. I'll be trying to monitor that and watch it as we move forward, if there's anything I can get back in front of you over the next 2 hours. We do have a lot to cover over the next 2 hours. Voting fraud being one of the issues, more evidence of it happening. I want you to keep in mind that we already have at least 500,000 votes already cast for the 2020 election. 500,000 as of yesterday morning. I told you I was one of those that have already voted. Have you? The election is November 3rd, but more than 500,000 have already voted. And as of yesterday, 25 states started sending out absentee ballots to registered voters who requested them. Others will be sending out applications for voters if they want them, and in some cases they're just simply going to mail the application out and hope it gets to the right person, the right address. In the meantime, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Pennsylvania reporting that they found numerous military ballots, including some cast by military, dumped, just discarded outside in a junkyard area. Most of those they found were, yes, for Trump. Not all of them, apparently, but most were. In the meantime, the Texas Attorney General, Ken Paxton, announcing more than 130 felony voter fraud charges in connection with a 2018 Democrat primary. Just a Democrat primary, 130 felony voter fraud charges. As he said, elections can be stolen outright by mail ballot fraud, and we've got the proof they did it this time. We'll get into more of that. Also, the Democrats, if they can't win one way or the other, they suddenly now want to see, well, we want to put a limit on the length of term a justice can serve on the Supreme Court, as it is now appointed by any president, Democrat or Republican, they're on for life. They now, the Democrats, want to start limiting the terms. I don't have a big issue with that. But the point is, we know it's coming about and being pushed because I think they see the writing on the wall. The way the country's going right now, they're not going to have an opportunity to appoint many in the future. And that's another thing. They've also decided to put a limit on how many times a president can nominate someone to the Supreme Court. That's going to come back to bite them, I promise you that. Lindsey Graham extremely upset as he's begun to see new FISA documents being unveiled showing what was happening behind the scenes with the Robert Mueller investigation and how we got to that investigation and the lies, the out-and-out lies that were taking place. And, of course, we have all those cell phones being just wiped clean and just disappearing. They couldn't find them. And now we're also told, by the way, the Durham investigation is now beginning to look at, stand back, we don't know how big this is going to get, stand back. The Durham inquiry is now beginning to look at the Clinton Foundation and all the money that went into the foundation, the sources, and then where it went. Lindsey Graham says there are going to be some people that should be worried, extremely worried. John LaBoutiere will be joining us later, always candid in his assessment of anything and everything. And also we'll wrap up today and this week with, I think, what we need at this point, an inspirational message from Lou Holtz, former Notre Dame coach, Hall of Fame coach in the college ranks. You don't want to miss it. Let your family and friends know we're on the air. We have a packed 2 hours coming up. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
We are slowly returning to normal as we knew life before COVID. Still, you need to be cautious. Make sure your business, school, place of worship are safe. Now that's where Wellington Environmental can help. You can schedule professional fogging or deep cleaning with just a phone call. I'll give you a number. But first, you should know Wellington Environmental now offers fogging equipment you can use. These individual units are in high demand, and Wellington has them available for now. They cost about $500, but my listeners get a big price break, a $100 discount. Save $100 just by saying you heard about it on Larry Connors USA. For more information on getting your personal fogging device or to schedule professional fogging, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Oh, I can feel my face when I'm with you. My love is. Oh, and I know she'll be the death of me. At least we'll both be numb. And she'll always get the best of me. The worst is yet to come. All the misery was necessary. We're worthy of love. Yes, I know.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So there's some people tonight have to be very worried, because now we know the FBI in December 2016 knew that the dossier was being prepared by a Russian agent. They never told the court. This is a massive effort by Russia to do a disinformation campaign against the Trump campaign, and it worked. Bottom line is the FBI used a document prepared by a Russian agent paid for by the Democratic Party to get a warrant against the Trump campaign.
Those are the words of Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham, last night on the Sean Hannity program, talking about, in his opinion, everything is now coming forward to show exactly what they suspected, that all of this inquiry into Donald Trump was simply a fraud from the beginning. He said, I hope all this is going to be a game changer. I hope the traditional media, mainstream media, will look at this abuse of power. My advice to Senator Graham, do not hold your breath. There are so many questions being raised by all these new text pieces coming out. The FBI agents, and I'm looking at a piece written by, let me get the author's name here. It appeared in the Federalist, and I cannot find the author. But basically it says that the FBI agents tasked by fired former Director James Comey to take down Donald Trump during and after the 2016 election were so concerned about the agency's potentially illegal behavior, they purchased liability insurance. Liability insurance to protect themselves less than 2 weeks before Trump was inaugurated. This is all in some of the previously hidden FBI text messages. They've been exposed and exploding, I might say, in federal court filings from Sidney Powell, the attorney heading the Michael Flynn legal defense team. That's part of what Lindsey Graham is also referring to. Some of this stuff coming out like this. One agent actually texted on January 10, 2017. That was the same day CNN leaked details that then-President-elect Trump had been briefed by Comey about the bogus Christopher Steele dossier. That agent texted on that very day, "We all went and purchased professional liability insurance." An agent responded by text, "Holy crap, all the analysts too?" The first agent, "Yep, all the folks at the agency as well." The agent on the other end texts back, "Can I ask who are the most likely litigators as far as potentially suing y'all?" The response, "Who knows? I think the concern when we got it was that there's a big leak at DOJ, and the New York Times, among others, were going to be doing a piece." So they rushed out and got liability, personal liability insurance, in case they were named and separated from the government and on their end. They were on their own, I should say, at that point. In the meantime, an FBI official who served on Mueller's team, FBI agent William J. Barnett, making comments during an interview at the Justice Department earlier this month, stated the White House attitude. Let me put it this way, not the White House. He said the Mueller team, special counsel prosecution, a White House National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, was all part of an attitude to, quote, get Trump. To get Trump. And this same agent, Barnett, said he did not wish to pursue a Trump-Russian collusion investigation as it was not there, and he considered it to be a dead end. He was on the Mueller team. Lindsey Graham's remarks again.
So here's the point. The FISA court was never told this. They were never informed that the dossier primary subsource was a suspected Russian agent. This is the biggest fraud yet on the FISA court.
And by that, he's also referring to this Steele dossier, of course. And there is another piece I have here. This is also from The Federalist, written by Tristan Justice, that the primary source for the Steele dossier was deemed a national security threat. And again, these are papers being released by Attorney General William Barr, declassified yesterday, and a previously redacted but now unveiled footnote in Justice Department Inspector General Horowitz's December report shows that the primary subsource, the very one Graham was referring to, quote, was the subject of an FBI counterintel investigation from 2009 to 2011 that assessed his, her documented contacts with suspected Russian intelligence officers. In other words, that primary subsource, now known to be Igor Dachinko, a Russian national with a checkered past, was investigated for being a Russian agent, and yet those running the Crossfire Hurricane investigation relied on him and the fake Steele dossier, getting its information from Dachinko and Steele, and they all knew this guy was a counterintel investigation previously. They were going to get Trump in any way possible, come hell or high water. And Lindsey Graham says all of this stuff coming out now, these latest bombshells all tied to the Russian investigation. Oh, he's angry.
It makes me mad that the FBI knew that the primary subsource, a single individual, was a suspected Russian agent. They used that person's work product to get a warrant against an American citizen on four different occasions. They never informed the court of this exculpatory evidence.
Never informed the court. And that's the big key right there, because that is a responsibility of prosecutors and investigators. They cannot withhold evidence that might show that the target, the indicted, the charged, is innocent. If they have it, they have to turn it over. They have to show, we have this, we still think we have a case, but here's something that you might want to see because we have it and we've got to give it to you. But they didn't do it. A clear violation. clear violation. Let me put it this way. Let's drill down to just you and your family. Let's say one of your children is arrested for stealing, shoplifting somewhere. In a store, maybe a few miles from your home. Police have been given a description, the name. They see video showing your child in the store. They don't see them lifting anything, but they see them in there. They see them going out, and they seem to maybe be carrying something. So they arrest them, and they charge them, and they think they've got enough to go ahead and move forward. Now, I'm bringing everything down faster than it normally would, and there would be, hopefully, a better inquiry than what I'm suggesting. But it still comes down to the fact that in the process, they found out that the store where they saw the video of the kid and everything is not the store where supposedly the shoplifting took place. They've got to present the evidence to you and your family attorney that we have this, but it's not from the place where it supposedly went down. They can't continue to act like it's the same store and prosecute your child on that basis. No, if you have evidence of that type, it has to be presented. And then you get into what's going on with all these collusions and this stuff being hidden and that the source was already deemed a national security threat. And the FBI agents in their text obviously very concerned that they might be facing some charges, civil charges. So they went out and bought professional liability insurance. You know why you get that. If you're a professional person, anything, and you don't have something like that, and something happens to the company, and they come after anyone and everyone associated, if you don't have some kind of insurance or some kind of separation legally from what might be involved, you could be wrapped up, you and all of your finances and your house, everything else. And then, of course, in the midst of all this, don't forget, we had all those cell phones that just were wiped of information. My director, Quentin, had told me the other day, and I relayed to you, that you actually have to go, if you're going to have everything disappear off your phone, you have to go into the settings and you have to manually change it as to how you can erase. And when you first accidentally enter your code to open up your phone, it will ask you again. And you maybe get two more tries and then it will shut it off for a few seconds. Then you can try again. You try a few more times, it's the wrong code, it will shut it off again. And then it gets down to, after 10 tries, it shuts down. Is that right, Quentin? After 10 or 11? After the 11th try, it will then, everything is gone because it assumes the person holding the phone shouldn't have it. So you absolutely have to make that effort. And the other day, Senator Marshall Blackburn, Republican of Tennessee, said, we've got to know why this happened. Dozens of cell phones from the Robert Mueller investigative team accidentally wiped, accidentally. He said they got caught. Now they're trying to execute a cover-up that nobody ever could have made this up. The record showing at least several dozen phones wiped of information because of, well, let me see, I forgot the password. 11 different times I forgot the password. Irreparable screen damage. Well, it just can't be seen. Guess it can't be downloaded either, huh? Loss of the device. Intentional deletion or other reasons. Senator Blackburn says, people are saying this is so implausible. How do you have 29 phones where 29 people forget their passwords? Ridiculous. She had said she was discussing that with Congressman Devin Nunes, Republican of California, recently. And they agreed. It just doesn't happen. And then on top of that, former FBI lawyer Lisa Page's phone went missing, and they can't find it. They can't find her phone. In the midst of all of this, now comes word, according to the New York Times, U.S. Attorney John Durham, who's been investigating the FBI conduct in the probe of the Trump 2016 presidential campaign. According to the New York Times, is now turning attention to the Clinton Foundation. Peter Schweitzer, in his 2015 book, Clinton Cash, talked about, quote, the untold story of how and why foreign governments and businesses helped make Bill and Hillary rich using the Clinton Foundation, a vehicle for the former president and then Secretary of State Clinton, Hillary, to sell influence and access. And that's why she had that illicit private email server and then destroyed 30,000 emails, saying it was all personal. No one really needed to know it. It had no bearing on the case. Durham already has one guilty plea from a former FBI lawyer who admits he altered an email to make it appear as if a former Trump campaign aide was not a CIA source when he knew it was. And now the Clinton Foundation, why were all those countries giving all that money, paying Bill Clinton $500,000 to come do a 15-minute speech? Because they wanted access to Hillary because they thought she was going to be the next president. That's what they thought. Well, Joe Biden, no public event scheduled yesterday, the 9th day in September. He's not on the campaign trail, and there's questions about where's his campaign partner, Harris. They're both hiding. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So Joe Biden told reporters the other day, that's Wednesday, when he did make a campaign swing through North Carolina, I'm going to be heavily engaged for the rest of the week preparing for the upcoming presidential debate. That's the 29th of this month. And so yesterday morning, they put a lid on all activities. 9:20 yesterday morning, saying, no public events or travel scheduled for the rest of yesterday or today or until the debate. And Senator Harris, also, no public event scheduled yesterday and not going to be on the campaign trail either. Well, reporters, of course, look at that, and then they see what Trump's doing. Trump scheduled to appear at numerous events. He's currently in Florida. He had campaign stops in Ohio, North Carolina. He's not slowing down whatsoever. Biden just is continuing to, quote, hide. Now I do have this story. For what it's worth, Barack Obama would join Kamala Harris at a pair of fundraising events next Friday, a week from today. They will hold a virtual small dollar fundraiser and also a virtual event for high donor dollars. Tickets for a virtual meeting and greeting with the former president and Kamala Harris, selling for $100,000 to $250,000 just to sign on and take part in a virtual? Are you kidding me? Anybody wants to pay that? Well, go ahead. Go ahead. Now, Obama did do a fundraiser with Biden back in June that brought in $7.6 million. We'll see. In the meantime, like I said, in the opening monologue today, the Democrats are looking for, we got to take care of some other things down the road. They want to get rid of the Electoral College because it didn't work for them last time. Now, if they win this time and they win with the Electoral College, because that's the only way they would win, I'm sure all the talk about destroying the Electoral College would just stop. Just forget it. Never mind. Remember the little lady on Saturday Night Live? What's all this about Soviet jewelry? I like jewelry. I can wear jewelry. Why is everybody upset over Soviet jewelry? No, we're talking about the religion, not what you wear. Oh, never mind. You remember that? They're going to have that attitude about the Electoral College if they should win. And they'll probably change their mind about what they're demanding or what they want now about the Supreme Court. They want to introduce legislation. They'll do it next week, apparently. to unveil a bill limiting Supreme Court justice terms. Now, they are currently appointed for life. I've always questioned that, but so it's been that way, and no one's had a problem until now. The Democrats realizing, hey, if they don't die or leave on our watch, the other side gets to put someone in, which also brings them to another thing. And that is co-sponsoring some legislation, not just to limit the justices, but to limit how many appointees or nominees any president could make. And that would be, I think, the last I saw, they're talking about no president can make more than two nominations to the Supreme Court. That could come back and bite them as well. But right now, they're running with that banner, lifting that high for everyone to see, because I think truly they see that the way they're going and what they're doing and trying to do this country is not going to have them in power for a long time to come down the road. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, John LaBoutière, former U.S. Congressman of New York, who's always candid in his remarks, and we don't always agree. Let's see about today. Stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Early in the evening, just about supper time, over by the courthouse, they're starting to unwind. Four kids on the corner, trying to bring you up. Billy Fisher, too now.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Glad to welcome back on board John LaBoutière, former U.S. Congressman from New York, author of the book Harvard Hates America. John, glad to have you back, sir.
Thanks for having me, Larry. Good morning. How are you?
And I'm great. And we've had a lot of things happen since you and I last talked. Of course, the most prominent being the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And now, of course, the battle to see if she should be replaced before the election or before Trump's end of his first term. Your thoughts?
You're right. He's going to announce it, obviously, his choice tomorrow at 5 o'clock Eastern time. And they have the votes to confirm this lady, whoever she is, in October before the election. They're going to do it.
And
now, I'm going to tell you why this thing has gotten where it's at, and it goes back to the Merrick Garland one. So we go to 2016, February. Judge Scalia dies in his sleep in Texas on a Saturday, as I recall, or they find him dead that morning in his bed. And right away, McConnell says, you know, we're not filling the seat. And Obama nominates Merrick Garland, who never gets a confirmation hearing, and therefore they never consider him. They don't have a vote. That was the mistake that set off this thing. What they should have done, the Republicans, in my view, is they didn't want to confirm Garland. They wanted to wait for the election. I understand that. Fine. Have the president nominate someone, have the confirmation hearing, and then vote him down.
I had the same thought, John, but I also said, of course, we'd all know it's going to be a sham going in. But I also agreed that I wanted, even if it were Hillary, I want the next president to make that decision. And we had 9 months out. Now, with this current one, I still stand by my original thought that I think the next president should do it. But I'm not going to fight against what they're trying to do, and it is different to the extent that the same party's in the Senate as in the White House. And when you look over history, that seems to be the way it happens every time.
Well, where you and I disagree is Trump. I don't like Trump.
Are you serious? What?
It's irrelevant to this argument.
Okay, all right.
He was elected to a 4-year term, so he is president when Justice Ginsburg died.
Correct.
All right, he's still president until January 20th. So it's within his term to do the things that he was elected to do. Same with Obama. I think that when they're president, they make the pick. Why are you saying, for instance, no, we should wait for the election and let the new president pick it. Why?
This president
was elected to do things while he's president.
Like I said, I fully agree. And I was willing to take a chance previously. I was, and I agree. Ginsburg herself said the president is a president till the last day of his last month of his term. So she acknowledged that as well. And, of course, the whole thing could have been avoided. And I had somebody penned me a very excellent letter to that extent the other day that she created this chaos because, of course, Obama really wanted her to kind of step aside so he would have that opportunity. And she hung on probably thinking that, again, Trump will be out and I don't want him to make the nomination, according to her granddaughter, but we don't really know otherwise.
Yeah. But, well, you know, here's the thing. It's going to get done. Trump will appoint someone who will be confirmed next month, I have no doubt. Now, that's the reality of it. The politics of it are, however, that it's going to hurt the Republicans and it's going to help the Democrats on November 3rd because the losing side in these things has the passion to overcome it. When you win, you're, so to speak, fat, dumb, and happy. When you've lost this seat, you're mad about it, and your voters vote, and your donors give. Look at the amount of money that might happen.
That might happen. But the other thing is, you and I've discussed before, and I still think the violence in the streets is sounding a bigger bell for the majority of Americans than the Supreme Court appointee, although it's a very big deal. And the Democrats are now rushing forward to saying we want to put a term limit on any Supreme Court justices and limit the number of times a president can appoint someone.
Well, that's crazy stuff. That's not going to be allowed. That's in the Constitution. It's a lifetime appointment, and that's not going to get changed. And, you know, Democrats are just out of their minds about all this. But if you look at what happened, a week ago tonight they announced Justice Ginsburg's death. Within an hour, Act Blue, which is the fundraising arm for the Senate Democrats, had raised, I think it was $9 million in an hour. By Wednesday, it was $165 million had come in from little donors giving $50, $75.
That also, though, does it not have a lot of ties to George Soros foundations and money?
No. Well, I don't know what his... They always throw his name around. But
well, but I mean, little, so you don't really donors. Know either, right? You don't.
No,
I don't know.
Little,
do you? Okay.
George Soros, you know, he's not giving people $75 to send in to Act Blue. I mean, I think my point is the losing side has the passion in the next election. 2 years ago, right now, right this, today, Kavanaugh was going through that horrible hearing. And he ended up getting confirmed, so the Republicans got what they wanted. And guess who won the election a month later? Democrats. Big. And 9 million more people voted Democrat than Republican. Same thing. The passion is on the losing side.
Let's look at another issue I think is hitting passion. I still think violence in the streets is a big one, too, but also COVID and what's going on. And I saw stats the other day that maybe 65 to 70+% of your restaurants in New York City will never reopen. You still can't do inside dining. I'm looking at a piece written by David Marcus of the Federalist, and says Andrew Cuomo has a new plan to kill New Yorkers. Basically, that he's going to do anything he can from you getting a vaccine.
Well, that I don't think Cuomo's not trying to kill New York. I mean. But it is true that, and we are spiking up again in several New York City neighborhoods now. So I think that I think the COVID thing is coming back nationally. It's coming back in England. Just as predicted, when the fall comes, a second wave will come. And it's happening. And it's because people go back indoors more often.
But the CDC's latest numbers pointed out the other day, I'm looking at two different sets of numbers, that 94% of those deaths, looking at morbidity accounts linked to COVID, also 94% of them had some other health ailment, asthma, obesity, or whatever else. Only 6% are so-called healthy, and many of those were also, quote, elderly, 80-plus. And then another report coming out that anyone under 65, or maybe 70, I don't have that exact number in front of you, your chances of dying from COVID, if you're healthy, is you have a 95 to 97% survival rate.
Right. Yeah, so, but here's the thing. First of all, you don't want to get it anyway because you may survive it, but you take the top pitcher on the Boston Red Sox, Eduardo Rodriguez. He got it. It went into the sac around his heart. He's got endocarditis. He had to miss the whole year. He didn't die. He's not going to die, knock on wood, but he's sick from it. And then you get, yeah, young people don't die generally, but they get it, and then they give it to their parents or their grandparents. As for underlying conditions, and this is going to sound awful, but have you looked around America lately when you go around? It's harder now with the pandemic, but this is a country filled with sick people who have diabetes, you know, obesity, heart problems, whatever. I mean, there's so many people in our fellow citizens who have an underlying health condition. And you add this thing on top, it gives me no comfort that they're the ones who are dying and healthy people aren't, because there aren't that many people who, especially say over 35, the obesity rate in this country is out of control.
You're right.
And I want to limit this virus as a citizen all the way until we get the vaccine.
I think I just saw a moment ago, and I can't find it now, that I want to say the Virginia governor, lieutenant governor, has come down with it. Have you
the
seen
governor that? And the first lady of North, Ralph Northam, he's got
that's
it.
That's right, that's right. I thought I saw it, but I couldn't find it in front of me.
And the governor of Missouri got it the other day,
right,
too.
Now, very quickly in the last minute or less, the mail-in ballot issue, we've had already 500,000 ballots cast already. I voted already. I don't know if you have up there, but, you know, the concern about fraud, mail-in ballots, we're finding them thrown in ditches and so forth. What's your thought on the legitimacy of the election if we have continuous ballots flowing in 6-7 days after the election?
Well, each state is, of course, deciding that separately. And federal judges in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania this past week each ruled that as long as they're postmarked before the close of the polls on November 3rd, and then they arrive, you know, at the Board of Elections later, they can be opened and counted up to, I think it's 6 days after the election. That is not a problem to me. Mail-in voting, I'm a lifelong Republican. It has been a very Republican thing to do until Trump threw out this conspiracy crap, which has no basis in fact.
I don't have time to argue that point with you, but I would disagree with you. And I'd like to take that up with you another time. Because we got time between now and the election. Can we do that?
Of course.
Oh, good. Good. I appreciate it. But, John, again, as always, I appreciate your time, sir. And we will
Thanks
do it again. You bet.
All right, talk
you
to bet. You soon.
Audience always loves it. John LaBoutière. We'll take a break when we come back. A very special story about someone getting an honor and finally coming home to rest. Stand by.
Story of the hot rod race with the Fords and Lincolns was setting the pace. That story is true. I'm here to say I was driving that Model A. It's got a Lincoln motor in it.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Of course, we hear and see from time to time, obviously, about how much taxes are paid by other states, maybe than where you are, certainly when you look at New York and elsewhere. But there's some news that we should share with you. We have a story that came out of the Chicago Tribune. And this involves, of course, Illinois residents. The Lieutenant Governor Stratton is warning that if you live in Illinois, you could face an across-the-board income tax hike of at least 20%. If you reject a proposed constitutional amendment shifting the state from a mandated flat rate tax to a graduated rate tax based on income. Now, you've got that coming up on your November ballot. the threat from the lieutenant governor, and I'd say it is a direct threat. Of course, the governor, Democrat governor as well, Pritzker, has already cautioned severe budget cuts could be on the way if this amendment is not approved to overhaul the income tax system. But the lieutenant governor's threat that all taxpayers, regardless of income, could face a tax hike unless that amendment passes November 3rd. In other words, I'd say basically, I'd call it just short of extortion. If you don't vote it the way we want, you get ready to pay another 20% on your income, regardless of your income. Folks in the land of Lincoln, you're already upset for the most part that the northern part of the state, Springfield and so forth, don't really care about rural Illinois. They're going to be even more upset over that issue. 80 years ago, a 22-year-old George Reeser finished his job in 1940 as a gas jockey in Washington, Illinois, where he lived with his siblings and parents. And that was before Pearl Harbor. He decided to serve his country. And that September, he took a train to Chicago, enlisted in the U.S. Marines. Then he ended up in San Diego, then assigned to Company A, 1st Battalion, achieved the rank of sergeant eventually. During the war, the 6th Marines would see heavy combat in the Pacific, later part of the Battle of Tarawa. In fact, on one point, 76 hours of fighting, claiming 99 Marines, one of them being Sergeant Reeser, who was 25 at that time. Killed November 22nd, believed to be buried on that island. But the military had to list his remains as non-recoverable. Well, in 2009, a not-for-profit organization, History Flight Incorporated, discovered the burial site of Reeser and others. The remains taken to a military lab in Hawaii, and ever since, of course, have been working on identifications. The information I'm reading for you comes from the Journal Star, written by Phil Luciano. So he gets the credit for writing this story and bringing it to the attention of all of us. They have identified, by dental analysis and other information, last month. So in Hawaii, a Navy mortician began to prepare the remains for transport back to Washington, Illinois. The remains placed in a casket, a Marine uniform laid across the remains before the coffin shut tight, and then an American flag draped across the top. Yesterday morning, a uniformed Marine escort with that flag-covered casket went to Hawaiian Commercial Airport and then, of course, headed stateside. Peoria Airport would be the closest nearby to Washington, Illinois, but the plane bringing him home could not land at that airport. So St. Louis was the arrival. Marine escort witnessing the removal from the cargo bay, and then a hearse along with members of the family, and 6 Marines from St. Louis as pallbearers escorting the casket into central Illinois. And, of course, about 50 motorcycle riders who always show up to support our fallen when they come home. Today, they are having a visitation from 4 to 6, open to the public in Washington, Illinois, for Sergeant George R. Reeser. Saturday, casket will be moved by Marines to Mount Zion Cemetery outside Deer Creek. There will be a graveside service, a double plot, double tombstone shared with a brother, Donald, who was also killed in action, but during the Korean War in 52. Brothers united and a fallen Marine coming home.
Next hour, we're going to focus again on the Breonna Taylor case and reaction from both sides involved, but also an inspirational message I do not want you to miss from Lou Holtz, former Notre Dame coach. You do not want to miss the next hour. Please stand by.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.